Hello, listeners and friends of the Unschool Fouls podcast. I'm your host, Megan, and you are listening to episode 40. A nice, even, round number to sort of close out what I guess is the very first season of this podcast. These conversations have breathed new life into me. They've helped me look at my own unschooling in new ways and to see the many ways that it's practiced by other people in other places. I've had this opportunity to connect with so many wonderful human beings around the world, both on and off the microphone, and I feel really lucky to have the opportunity and the privilege to hold these conversations and share them with you. And this one is no exception. It's so special. I have a chat with Andrea, aka the humorous homeschooler. If you don't know her, maybe just pause this and go watch some TikToks and then come back. We talk about her journey from being a school teacher to this unschoolish reverse planning TikTok bestie. We cover all kinds of things from burnout to neurodivergence to school harm. And of course, we discuss the famous TikTok famous reverse planning that is an amazing tool that many, many unschoolers will be able to use. So join me in welcoming Andrea to the podcast. Welcome, Andrea, to the Unschool Fouls podcast. I'm so, so excited to be speaking with you. To get started, why don't you just share with listeners a little bit about yourself and your relationship to unschooling or self-directed learning?
Thank you for having me, Megan. I love you and I love your content and I so appreciate the stuff that you put out there. So I was really excited when you got a hold of me, even though it took us a little while to get connected because I was, and you were so gracious because I was moving through my burnout stage and I was in recovery from burnout, from like the winter time. So I really appreciate you sort of, being patient with me on this, but so I'm so happy to be here and I feel like, it's kind of perfect timing just where I'm at in my own homeschool journey and personally too. But I feel like the question of like, tell me about yourself is always so hard because there's so much, right?
Yes.
and also, people. Yeah. And also with being like a neurodivergent person, I'm like an oversharer. So I never know if I'm sharing too much or too little. So just like, just tell me to stop if I've like said enough.
No, you will not say too much, I'm sure. But I'm also a perpetual oversharer, so.
Yeah, we have that in common then. I am finishing up, but we're in our third year of homeschooling. And really we are pandemic homeschoolers, which I think a lot of people are now. And so I was also a teacher though, when the pandemic hit and I was a middle school teacher, health teacher, yay. I know everybody thinks I'm like, you know, out of my mind, being a middle school teacher, especially health, but it's a passion of mine. That's my background is health education. I was a community health educator before I was a teacher, in the community. And I focused on comprehensive sex ed, and youth development programs. And so then I became a teacher, and when the pandemic hit, my son would have been going into kindergarten in fall of 2020, and I just knew I was already out as a teacher, and I hadn't even been teaching that long. It was a career change for me, but it was a really hard year that year, and so I already was sort of feeling like I didn't want to return to teaching, and when everything, you know, stopped. And then I was forced to basically rest, even though I'm with my two kids, young kids at the time. You know, a lot of people felt like it was a terrible situation for them. I really felt like it was a blessing in disguise because it forced me to slow down. And so it was during that time where sort of the couple of months in the first of the shutdown, where I realized that I didn't want to return to teaching and I wasn't going to put my soon to be kindergarten son, who is also neurodivergent, in virtual kindergarten, because he would have been required to sit at a computer for quite a few hours out of the day. And so we decided to homeschool. It was a really hard first year. I'm not going to lie. I feel like every first year homeschooler, it's hard, right? Like, I feel like the first year is always hard. So it was wonderful, but it was really hard. And I went the route of, because I was a teacher, not really replicating school at home, but definitely using my teacher experience and my teacher tendencies, which as a teacher, I am very type A. I plan everything down to the minute, because you kind of have to in a classroom setting. And so I just tried to check the boxes every day with my kindergartner, who's neurodivergent. And he quickly showed me through a lot of tears and frustration that that wasn't the way for him. And really at that age, you know, it's a lot about play anyway. And so going into the second year, I actually had him signed up, because I was like, I don't know if I can do this again. Let's sign him up. Let's put him into school. My daughter wasn't yet in school, school aged. But 2 weeks before school was about to start, I just had this gut feeling. And I'm the type of person where I make decisions based on my intuition and based on how I'm feeling about them, which can be a good thing and a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just had this feeling that it wasn't right. It wasn't a right decision for us to put him into the school system. So we kept him home again for the next year, him going into his first grade year. And that second year of homeschooling was so much better, because I actually discovered sort of this unschool life. And that's halfway through that year, really, when I started to discover what I do, which is called reverse planning. And then it just kind of all clicked. And so this third year has been the most comfortable and the most just chill that I have ever felt so far about homeschooling and just about the way that we're doing things. So it's been a really, like, you know, eye-opening experience. And I feel like when you choose to homeschool, it's not just a journey for the kids. It's a journey for your entire family. I mean, that's true for us. And so that's where we're at. We're finishing up year three, but like I said, not really finishing, because we sort of continue to learn and grow in school naturally, which is part of the reverse planning that I do. But it's really hard, but we love it.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Before we get to the reverse planning, which I'm just like so excited to talk about, say more about your transition to a more self-directed experience with schooling him at home. What could you say about that you feel like listeners might want to hear, might resonate with, or maybe might feel seen around, especially since you mentioned that it was particularly tricky around like trying to implement like sort of classroom management type teacher tools on a very young neurodivergent person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's what I'll say is that our journey to sort of come to this child-led, self-directed, unschoolish style of homeschooling is, what it really came down to was this individualized education, right? Recognizing that the traditional style of learning just doesn't work for my kid, doesn't work for my oldest. Whereas my youngest, who is now in kindergarten, so I have a second grader and kindergartner, she is more sort of like type A. She does like to sort of check boxes every day. And so just this past year, what I did realize is that you do have to have an open conversation, even with your young kids, about how they want to learn. They do know how they want to learn. It's not like you have to sit there and tell them, okay, we're going to learn this way. Let them tell you on their own, because they're well aware of what works for them and what doesn't work for them. And so with that, it almost was like, so like I said, I was a very type A in my teacher role. Come home, and I am not. I wouldn't say I'm the opposite. I do crave routine, and we definitely have a routine and a rhythm to our days, but I would consider myself sort of like a wanderlust, like free spirit. Like, I will pick up and go whenever, wherever type of person. So with that, I just realized that at home and trying to teach my own kids, I wasn't a type A, and it wasn't working for me either. And so it's not just about how the kids learn. It's also about how how you're able to, how your brain works as the homeschooler and how you're able to process information and give out that information. So it really has to be like this partnership. And so when I finally realized that, okay, that style of learning doesn't work for my kid, he really hyperfixates and he can focus, but it has to be something he's really interested in. And so, you know, he could sit and do Legos for 3 hours. Yeah. And there's a lot of value in that. And I think that when you start homeschooling, especially when you're a newer homeschooler, you have to go through this deschooling process as well, right? You have to be able to retrain your brain to realize that the system maybe that you were brought up in, if you were in public school or a traditional school system, is not the only way to do it. And that there are so many learning opportunities in so many different ways. And so my oldest is really, he's really who showed me that like traditional learning does not have to look like traditional school, and that learning happens all the time. And so it was just a combination. Like I said, it was like a partnership. It was like my kid showed me that, but then I also had to recognize my own neurodiversities, which happened in basically this last year and a half. Because I am a self-diagnosed ADHDer, and I could be some other things too that I haven't pinpointed. But knowing my own neurodiversities and knowing myself as a homeschooler was also part of getting to that self-directed learning, if that makes sense.
It does. It definitely does. And I also love that you touched on that piece around recognizing that it didn't work for you either, like mm-hmm. trying to implement that style at home, mm-hmm. like went against how you felt and how you wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I think there's like an interesting process that happens there with your children when you like are coming to that partnership and realizing that something doesn't work. And there's sort of like this like rupturing and repairing type situation where you have to kind of like bring the awareness up, say that it's not working. And then there's like a repairing of like, you know, apologizing for the pressures and the pushing and mm-hmm. sharing to whatever capacity your young person has to receive this information and whatever comfortability you have as the adult to share it. But like sharing that awareness and like that you've come to it and that you understand where that came from, and that you mm-hmm. want to do things differently. And like, what are some ideas they have? Just imagining that process going down between you two. I'm inferring that it was similar to that or along the lines of that. And that's just really cool. It's super cool.
Yeah, it was pretty close to that. But I have to say, I touched on sort of that deschooling process, and I feel like that never ends, because even in year three, and I've talked to, you know, homeschoolers that have been doing this for 10 years now, that you're constantly going to have sort of that worry, right? That you're not doing enough. And so for me, what it came down to was, it wasn't the pressure that I was, it's what I was brought up in, right? Like I was getting that sort of like pressure from being raised in a traditional school setting of where I think my kids should be, as opposed to just letting them be and allowing them to sort of learn at their own pace and figure out things as they want to do them and honoring that for them. And so I feel like even now in my third year, I'm still trying to combat that sort of like internal like voice in my brain that's telling me, oh, am I doing enough? I don't know if they're at the right spot. And the reality is that they're just where they should be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about having been an educator and sort of like keeping your son out of that environment because of it not being something that would probably work well for him. Mm-hmm. I don't want to like put any words in your mouth, but I kind of generalize a lot of experiences that children have in school to just like school harm or being harmed by school. And I want to clarify that I don't necessarily mean that in like an overt way, or like or even that everyone is not necessarily safe at school, or that or that home is safer than school. But I was curious if you might want to answer a couple of questions just in the educator realm of things, just because of that kind of overlapping and crossover of a lot of this being in your brain training that's like telling you to do things a certain way, like the educator way. What do you think in schools might be some of the biggest contributors to that school harm that you might have seen in just your particular settings?
That's a tough question. So I'm only speaking from my own experience, but as a teacher, there are so many things that are expected of teachers that is just not humanly possible. Mm. And there are so many kids that you need to focus on and you can't focus on, that it makes it really difficult to do your job in the best way you can. And so that's why you have so many teachers exiting, and you have a lot of teachers in burnout who can't exit and who are still in their profession because they love it and they're not there for the money. We all know that. It's because you make connections with your students. And so really it's more about, it's a broader issue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's
more top down. It's not like there's so much to work on, and there's so many things that could be wonderful about the education system that I feel like it's just not equipped to go that route. And there would need to be a complete overhaul of the education system. Now, I am a huge advocate of choosing whatever works for you and your family, because there are so many people who either can't homeschool for whatever reason. And I know there are a lot of people who say, oh, but if you want to do it, you make it work. But that's where this whole and I'm someone who says that homeschooling is a privilege. And I know that there are sacrifices. I make sacrifices. We as a family make sacrifices to make homeschooling work. But I also know that I have a lot of privilege that comes along with already being able to make this happen from the beginning. Because I was born into privilege. So I didn't have to work as hard. I don't have to make as many sacrifices as someone else, because I am privileged and I can make this choice fairly easily. And so I do think, though, that some people really just don't want to homeschool. It's just not something that they feel like they want to do. Mm-hmm. And so the only option they have is public school. And my whole thing is, I get overwhelmed thinking about what can we do to change the system? What can we do to help it? But really it has to come down to the individual parents, and the individual parents being advocates for their kids. And that's the only way that you're really going to be able to sort of make the difference, and like sort of see that change, is to be that advocate for your kid. Because
right, for your child, and like to see it in their schooling lifetime.
Yes, because really what it's about is whatever education style you choose, lifestyle, it's about how involved you are as a parent.
Yeah.
So if you're a homeschooler and let's say you have your kid do like everything online, you're not asking them questions about anything. There are tons of online programs, right? And they're wonderful. And I do know homeschoolers who exclusively do online programs, but they're also really involved. They ask questions. They recap with their kid. They sit down with them and do them. And so, but if you're not involved with things like that, just like if you're not involved and you don't know what's going on in the public school setting, you're kind of like setting your kid up for failure in a way, because they're going to need that support from you as the parent.
Yeah, you know, you were touching on educators being in burnout, having so many students. I think about like how many children's lives and personal stories that there are for an educator to hold. Mm-hmm. Just knowing everyone's, you know, background and trying to keep them up to whatever the standards are and whatever obstacles might be in that child's way outside of school.
Mm-hmm.
I think you touched a little bit on the like feeling overwhelmed by what kind of overhauls or implementation could be done. I kind of wonder like if maybe just because the piece around all of these children's personal lives, that's a relationship thing. And like, there's not an ability for one adult to have a relationship, an authentic connected relationship with 22 to 30, you know, second graders.
Yeah.
All year long.
Yeah. You'd be amazed though. They do.
Like, I know, but that has to lead to the burnout, right? Like they're holding all of that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely part of it. And for me, that's why I am an ambivert, right? So I'm like an extroverted introvert. So I get so drained from like intense social interaction. So why I thought teaching to students, middle schoolers, no less, I don't know why I didn't see it coming, like where I was going to get in burnout, because what I was getting burned out about are holding all of that emotional weight that I was getting from my students. Because I was the health teacher, this is going to sound absolutely bonkers. So as the health teacher, my students rotated out every 6 weeks. So I had 7-8 classes. I can't remember if it was 7 or 8, 7 or 8 classes of 30 plus students every 6 weeks, and they would rotate out. So I was, I was seeing literally every student in the school year. Whereas like a core subject class, you have like just the student, you have them all year, right? So you have your students for the 7 or 8 classes all year long. And I was literally seeing every student in the entire school. And so that for us was about 1,100 students that I would see in the whole year. And so being the health teacher, we would touch on really intense topics. In sixth grade, they start talking about sexual abuse. So I would have to do the sexual abuse unit with my sixth graders. And it brought up a lot of emotions. And there was always prepping, like letting parents know that that's what was going to be going on in class that week. Kids crying in class because it brought up a memory, and then having to send them down to the counselor. So for me, it was so overwhelming because every day I would come home and take that with me, and I couldn't let it go. Yeah. And so I couldn't be present with my own family. I couldn't be present with my own kids. I just would feel so burnt out that I just would want to sit and like I couldn't do anything. And then on top of that, my kids were spending sometimes 10 hours at daycare/preschool while I was teaching, and they would have meltdowns daily. The second they got in the car, they would just melt down. And that's both my kids, not just my oldest. And so, teachers, like I said, teachers get into the profession to make these connections. Yes, it's about like teaching students the academics, but amazing teachers are there to be a mentor, be a supportive grown up in these kids' lives who may not have it at home. And it's just such an important relationship that you build with your students that it is a contributing factor to burnout, but I also feel like that's, for a lot of teachers, that's worth it.
Yeah.
That's the piece that's worth it. What teachers, in my experience, are feeling burnout about are the requirements coming from top down, from from even higher than that, being told that my student is just a test score. Which I was told that by a principal. So I actually had a principal come into my classroom and give a talk to my students before they were having their state testing, because he didn't want to be embarrassed he wanted them to do their best because he didn't want to feel embarrassment for the school. And it just like broke my heart. I was like, this is not what school should be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you asked about like all these things that are contributing to feeling, you know, these things happening. And part of the safety in school is like feeling like you're supported and feeling mm-hmm. like your education and your academics aren't just that. These kids are whole people, right? And that's sometimes why I get so frustrated with people who don't want certain things taught in school systems and who really, you know, are fighting to get things taken out of school systems, because our kids spend so much time with adults, sometimes more than they see their own family at home.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to talk about these things. I mean, they for sure talk about a lot of those things, and they are exposed to a lot of different things, a lot of different people. And so when you shut them down from talking about the diversities of the world,
mm-hmm.
And the challenges that they face, then it becomes an unsafe place for them to be.
Yeah. And I think it also breeds, more things to occur that are unsafe, because mm-hmm. there's just no good information to combat the bad information.
Right. Right. And in terms of like health education, if you as the parent aren't taking that responsibility at home, they're getting it at school, depending on where you live in the country. But also they're getting it from their friends and from the internet.
Yeah.
So, you know, you really, and so if you're choosing to homeschool, from my perspective, like you are 100% responsible for everything health education now. And that's why lately I've just been sharing a lot of like book stacks in terms of comprehensive sex ed. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting a lot of feedback on it where people are just like, thank you for sharing these, because I haven't quite figured out how to breach that topic. I'm not sure, what's appropriate, or you've given me the courage to even like start talking about it with my kids. So thank you. And that's been over this past year, a huge part of my mission is to make sure that homeschool families have access to quality, inclusive, health education resources.
Yeah, I think it's very important and good work. And I hope that you're taking breaks and taking care of yourself in between.
I definitely am now. I wasn't before, which is what caused the burnout, but I've learned. I've learned since then.
I mean, the whole reason I found you was through TikTok. And first of all, I was like, we need to be friends. So, yeah. and also just the content on the reverse planning was just so cool that I was like, this is so cool. More people need to know about this tool.
Yeah.
And I know that like the internet and social media is always under fire. You know, it's bad for us. AI is going to take over. All the kids are in danger, but there is connection. There is real cross-country, transatlantic or Pacific or mm-hmm. whatever ocean friendships being built, and people feeling seen and seeing themselves in the world through this virtual lens. I mean, TikTok is just so cool. There's like fashion is in its chef's kiss era right now on TikTok.
Yeah.
Have you seen the way young people are doing their makeup and the thrifting haul?
I have.
It's yep. amazing.
Yeah. It is really cool. It is really cool. And I agree that like, social media has such a bad rap, right? Like I think a lot of, especially older generations, think that it's sort of like corrupting the minds of the younger generations, and like, it's awful. You shouldn't be on it. But to be honest, I started my humorous homeschooler account because I felt so alone, and I felt in homeschooling, and I felt like there were things happening in my homeschooling that I was like, this must be happening for other people. Like, I have to just start sharing some of this stuff because it can't just be me. And so when I started sharing a lot of my more like funny videos on like, can you believe this is what I'm dealing with? Or can you believe that this happened today? I found that like, there were just a lot of other homeschoolers who felt the same way. And now it has sort of morphed into not just homeschooling, but talking about neurodivergence, obviously inclusion. And so it's just become this like beautiful little community that I just love so much. And there are times where I do have to step away, but it's never because of the real people, like the real deal people who I connect with. It's always because of, I'm sharing a quote unquote controversial topic, which is always about inclusion. And then I'll get 100+ people who leave and I get some, you know, hate comments, troll comments. And usually I step off of social media for like a week just to like clear my head and let it just all go away. But it doesn't mean I'm going to stop sharing about that stuff. Sorry. So
yeah, it's too bad for them.
To me, what it's doing is it's making my space a safer place for people to be. And because as a bi woman myself, it needs to be safe for me, but it also needs to be safe for other people who identify like me or in that community. And I'm not here for sugarcoating a lot of things anymore. I got to be honest. I feel like this year I'm sort of in my like, I don't give a F era sort of. And I feel like I share more of that on TikTok. I'm a lot more spicy on TikTok than I am on Instagram. And I think that's because I feel safer on TikTok.
Yeah.
Because people in general are people are quick to respond and quick to give their opinion. But I feel like in general, for someone like me and others like me, it's a lot more welcoming and a lot more inclusive. And on Instagram, it's a little bit more dicey.
Yeah. You get a wider variety of people too on TikTok.
Yeah.
It's a shame that those people like, you know, will unfollow or whatever because they don't like seeing rainbow or. Your content is so engaging. It's like watching fun videos from a friend that I've had for ages.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Even when you're being funny or using like a sound that's not meant to be, you know, soft, your presence is just warm and tender. And like people have got to go watch you. You remind me to care for myself, to drink water. You remind me I'm not alone, that there are other people in the world who get just as overwhelmed and need like noise breaks and to never forget the snacks. Like I need that in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's perfect.
Oh, I appreciate that, Megan.
Okay, so onto the thing that I reached out about, the epic tool of reverse planning. Mm-hmm. How can you explain this without visuals, without us being on a visual to show people?
Yeah,
and I can link stuff in my show notes and stuff for people to look at. But let's explain to folks what is reverse planning.
Okay, so reverse planning is so I originally heard about it through one of the podcasts from Julie Bogart's Brave Learner podcast. So I had listened to one of her episodes and she had talked about sort of, and she was speaking to people who are like new homeschoolers and who are just taking their kid out of the school system. And she started talking about the sort of de-schooling process. But while she was talking about that, she mentioned recording everything that your kids do for 2 weeks. Literally recording every activity, every conversation, every discussion. And by the end of those 2 weeks, go back and assign those activities to a subject. And from that, you're going to see and you're going to recognize that your kids actually learn a lot all on their own and learn naturally all on their own without you ever having to plan literally anything. And so she didn't actually, I went back and listened to it a couple months ago and she didn't actually call it reverse planning. So I don't know why I started calling it that. And I think it comes from my teacher brain because in reverse planning in a school setting, it's where you plan from behind. You essentially plan from the end of the year and work your way backwards. And we called it reverse planning. And so I think I just used that term, only I use it sort of I obviously use it in a different way. So essentially what it is every single day, and I'm going to come back to that point I just said about every day. So next to that, but every day at the end of the day, I record what my kids have done throughout the day and I assign it a subject. Now in my planner, I am notorious for buying an expensive planner and then never touching it. So I go out and I buy the cheapest planner I can find. And I am not a bells and whistles type of planner. Like I don't buy the ones that are like super fancy. I just need something super simple and minimalist. And so I buy the cheapest planner and I write all the subjects at the top of the page every week. And so for us in Maryland, because we are required, and this is what's helpful for people who are required to report in their state. For us in the state of Maryland, we're required to report 7 different subjects. And so that would be language arts, social studies, science, math, PE, health, and art. Yeah, that's 7. So we have to have examples of all of those subjects. And so as somebody who predominantly unschools, I go back and I assign those subjects at the end of the day and I use color code. So I just use a regular pen and then I color code it with highlighters. And really you see exactly that your kids are learning every day. And then that way you're able to go back and also recognize, okay, maybe we're not covering social studies as much as we would like to, or much as I would like my kids to. So how can we supplement that? How can I place sort of like an invitation for them to learn a little bit more? Where can we go on a field trip? Who can we learn about? Things like that. Get engaged a little bit more on social studies. Now, I'm going to go back to that asterisk of every day because of my ADHD brain, I will hyperfixate on recording for a month straight. And I've posted about this before. I will hyperfixate, literally record something every single day. And then the next month it will be completely blank. I just fall off the wagon and I don't even record anything. And I always I guilt trip myself about that a lot too. And then after posting that's what happened, I realized that it happens to a lot of other people. So what I started to do was just take, because we all kind of have our phones on us all the time. Mm-hmm. I just take a quick video or a quick picture, or I snap a picture. And then that way I can go back a month ago if I needed to and see exactly what we did on what day. And then I could go back and record it in my planner. So that's the way that I'm able to sort of live in a state, unschool, and also still report to the county without following a curriculum.
Yeah, there are so many families who are unschooling and still have, you know, state-imposed requirements for documentation mm-hmm. and even evaluations. Mm-hmm. And I think that this tool can be used like minimally, even if you don't have requirements in your state, mm-hmm. just for your own peace of mind. And you can just jot things down.
Absolutely.
And you don't even have to fancy color code or anything. You can literally just jot down and record your children's lives. Mm-hmm. Then you can also get really detailed with it. Mm-hmm. And probably really cool digital ways that you could track all of this stuff.
Sure there is. I am a pen and paper gal. So
yeah, I like your pen and paper way too. when you said like you would do it for a month straight and then you just fall off, I was literally like pumping my hands in there. I was like, shout out to all the bullet journalers. Cause like I work on my layout. I've got it all great. I have my months pre-planned ahead and they're already filled into my bullet journal and I just can mm-hmm. fill my weeks in as I go. And then I'll lose that little son of a gun. Like yeah. it's just gone. I can't find it anywhere.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so relatable. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I've actually also heard of people, I have a friend who does a similar sort of reverse planning. She's more of a planner. They follow curriculum. But she also journals at the end of every day. So if you're somebody who likes to journal, and reflect, because there are a lot of us that do, I don't because I just don't. But at the end of the day, if you wanted to, instead of doing it sort of like this bullet, you know, like where you're just recording the activity, you could absolutely get out a journal and just do it as a journal entry.
Yeah.
And do it that way. And you could even color code in the journal entry if you wanted to, if that makes it more organized for you. Yeah. But yeah, reverse planning completely changed our homeschool journey, and it changed my life in terms of my anxiety levels of surrounding homeschooling.
Yeah.
Because I always felt like when I had to check a box, you know, I would spend time like planning some of these things, right? And it could be something simple. But for me, when I take the time to plan something and then my kids are like, yeah, you know, that's not for me. I'm good. And then they walk away. It's like triggering for me. I'm like, hey, I just spent all this time planning this amazing, fun activity, and you're just walking away from me. And it was just so frustrating.
Yeah.
And so that's why when I found this, I just was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This just like my anxiety just left. Like, I just don't have anxiety. I mean, I still have anxiety. Let's be real. No, I still have it for sure. But my anxiety surrounding having to check a box for homeschooling just disappeared. Yeah. I still have sort of these feelings of like, am I doing enough? Like I talked about before, but I just don't feel that pressure. And there's no more tears, no more forced learning, no more. It's really about like giving my kids opportunities to learn. I love to strew. I don't know if you know what that is, but for people who don't, you basically set something out. Like, so it could be a book. You strew things around your house, right? You can set up something at the table, set a book out over at the chair, do whatever. And then if your kids happen to walk by it and they engage in it, that's great. If they don't, whatever, it's fine. You didn't spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
And so it invites topics of discussion. And the more that you do that, the more they're going to see that there's all their world will open up, and there's all these things that they could learn about if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the difference.
Yeah. I used to strew a lot more when they were younger with like physical objects around the house and kind of cultivate, wherever we live, cultivate a home of lots of materials. So if it's, you know, books or crafting supplies or sewing machine, just all kinds of materials. And so I spent a lot of their really early years acquiring a lot of stuff, which if I could go back, I probably wouldn't have acquired so much. Cause again, with the whole, oh, I thought you would love this, but then they didn't love it.
Yeah.
And I had this idea for them that like, they would really love to sew one day. So I started focusing more on acquiring things that were of family use that I at least would use, or my husband and partner would use for some reason. And then it wasn't like investing in, you know, things that were just random supplies that sometimes would cost a little much. Like, it took me a long time to invest in one of those tabletop cutting mats that you can like cut really detailed things on, and the razor can kind of go in. It took me a long time to get one of those.
I love that perspective. Like, I really love the idea of getting things that would serve a purpose for like everybody in the house, not just the kids.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. I mean, early on, I definitely like, I had this dream that I would eventually acquire Magna tiles. I'm sad to say that my youngest is 12 and probably past the Magna tile phase of her life.
Oh.
And I did not ever acquire a set of Magna tiles, but that is okay because we survived and we learned a lot. We played with Magna tiles in museums and at other people's houses. And so it's fine. Like, I know there's things that we think when our kids are young, and maybe everyone doesn't think these things, but like, I want these supplies that will help, you know, create a good learning environment. But sometimes those supplies are pots and pans or a walk down the street to get some tapioca flour to make boba. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, $100 set of Magna tiles.
No.
Also, those Magna tiles are really expensive. Like, I really think we should all acknowledge that they're very high priced toys.
They are. We do have Magna tiles. My kids are starting to phase out of using them. And we bought the first set. And then after that, we were like, we're never doing this again because they kind of sat in the bin for a long time. And then we got gifted some from grandparents. Yeah. So we were lucky in that. But I feel like families, especially homeschool families, feel a lot of pressure to go out and get all these supplies and go out and get them like these expensive learning things. And a lot of them are very wonderful. And a lot of them come from small businesses, who people who also homeschool. And that's awesome. But I also feel like there are so many other things that your kids can learn from that aren't going to cost you like a quarter of your paycheck.
Yeah.
So, you know? For sure. So yeah, that's a great point about that.
Yeah. So string for us looks like a new thing that I'm just recently trying. I was chatting with I have a small support group that I am a part of within the Unschool Files community. There's a member that runs a small like face-to-face chatting support group monthly. And so there's monthly cohorts, and we were talking about strewing. So it's funny that you brought it up. And you know, people have different opinions about strewing. There are some really unschooling purists who are like, all strewing is coercion. And people who are like, introduce as many things as you can, and something will stick eventually. And every person can just choose for themselves, in my opinion, like whatever works for you. It's, I don't think there's some doctrine written somewhere. And if you believe that there is a doctrine, then I don't know, that's kind of culty.
I agree.
It's a little culty, but I will just say that, like, for some reason I had this thought in my mind. We have tons of windows in our apartment. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to start writing stuff on the windows with a dry erase marker. Mm-hmm. Like, put little illustrations based on things that they're interested in. So, like, not totally random, but like, my youngest wants to know more in the areas of sciences and math. And they wanted to make boba tea. I mentioned walking down the street to get tapioca, because I literally did that this morning. And one of the things is I drew an illustration of boba tea and wrote some really cool facts about tea and the steps to making the tapioca pearls from the flour, and, you know, wrote the Chinese characters of boba pearls. Mm-hmm. And my youngest walked right up to it and was instantly like, yeah.
That's so cool.
Pretty excited about it. Yeah. So
what a great idea.
I think it's funky and cool. And like, maybe you have a whiteboard in your house, or you have a chalkboard wall, or.
Yeah.
Whatever. I know some people use like a why wall or a wonder wall, where you can write questions that you have and curiosity.
Yeah, I have seen that. Although I feel like the windows, you can't really go wrong with that. I mean, we have tons of windows as well. So when you started talking about that, it reminded me of when my kids were, you know, a couple of years ago, I used to utilize our windows with dry erase markers a lot more than I do now. So maybe I'll kind of revisit that, because I love that idea of just like putting something up. And for me, like you said, everybody has sort of their own like views and opinions on what is deemed as sort of like unschooling and not unschooling. And I'm just kind of like, why do you care? Just let families do what they want to do. And I understand having sort of like this general overview of what unschooling is, but I also feel like if somebody wants to implement even a portion of of unschooling, then that's golden. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely centering the relationship and the partnership with your child, however it is that you are approaching learning, like that's rad in my book. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about how to center relationship and partnership with your young person that goes to school? Let's have coffee. Like, I would totally want to talk to someone who has interests or curiosities. And I think like being open about those interests and curiosities versus like closed off and sort of like gatekeepy almost. Mm-hmm. Like, this is my approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Kind of, yeah.
You're not doing it right. Like, that's not helping the movement. It's not advancing connection of people.
No.
It's advancing like the collective liberation of all of us by doing that. It's just separating us off even more. So,
yeah, I agree.
This is not a time where we need more of that. So,
100%.
I was wondering if you might talk to me a little bit about ways that you keep the demands on your young people low while still being a community of practice as a family.
Yeah. So something interesting is that the neurodivergence, the way it works in our family, is that we definitely are a low demand family, which basically means that, like, I'm not requiring a lot from, I'm not putting a lot of demands on my kids, especially if they are struggling. And we, to be honest, we really appreciate this slower paced life. Like it really works for us, because the life we had before just wasn't working. But also structure is very helpful. Because like I said, we're a neurospicy family. So we have ADHD going around, but we also have some other things that I don't really talk about just out of respect for my kids. So I don't talk a lot about their, you know, the diagnosis, official diagnosis that we have going on. I just like to say we're neurospicy. And so with that comes a lot of like, we do have to have some structure. And some we found this past year, and really it was for myself as my kids started attending the Boys and Girls Club. And that's just, it's a 2-hour time frame that they're there. And really it gives me a break because they get to go somewhere. But it's also educational and they get to meet some new kids. And it's just been a wonderful experience for us. I know not everybody has the same experience, but it has been for us. It's been wonderful. But what I have observed since then is that my kids' threshold is just about that. Meaning like after that 2 hours, they're pretty much tapped out. And so if they were in a traditional school setting, just like they did when they were younger, it would be Meltdown City probably daily. And so we also consider that to be sort of like part of our community effort in sort of like keeping on top of what's going on in our community, connecting with our community. I also really feel like it's important to, it doesn't matter how young your kid is. If your kid is telling you that they're tired, please listen.
Yeah.
Like your kid will know if they can handle something or not. And so if your kids are in all these activities, meaning a demand, and then they express to you that they're tired and you notice that maybe they're struggling with these transitions going from activity to activity, it might be time to either step back a little bit or reevaluate how much they're involved, or just like take a week off and like just don't do anything for that whole week.
Yeah.
Just to give them a break. Cause that's what happened to us about a month ago with my youngest. She actually, and she's six. And so she actually said to me, "Mommy, I feel like I'm just doing too much." And so again, I feel like putting less demands on your kid, but also wanting to continue to feel like you're a part of this community. It really is about just connecting with your own child and having open communication. And so I keep hearing more sort of about this like consent-based learning too.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really reflecting on that a lot in terms of like, we want our kids to sort of have this like holistic, rounded education, right? But maybe they're just not ready at some point to join this activity or learn about this thing. And that's okay. Doesn't mean they're never going to be ready. It just means that they need to develop a little bit more and be able to handle certain things. And it might just be at that age, they're just not ready. Because I feel like there's this pressure to like, especially as homeschoolers, I feel like there's more pressure to get your kid involved in more things, to prove something, to prove that you have kids that can socialize, to prove that your kids are involved in the community, to prove that they're well adjusted. There's a pressure in the homeschool community to feel that. And I am here to say that nobody's paying attention to you. Nobody cares because everybody's concerned about themselves, which is part of the problem. But you have to really like just listen to your kids. And so if they're telling you that they're not into this, they're not into that, you know, they'll be able to learn what it means to have a commitment to something down the road. They're not going to learn that sort of lesson of life of like, you know, you sign up for something, please commit to it. because what we're really fostering in that when we tell them that is, hey, when you get a job someday, if you're burnt out, you need to push through.
Yeah.
Don't take a break. We need to continue this cycle of this, like, get through it, keep going, get through your burnout, and then crash.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that anymore. I want my kids to learn that you can do what you can handle, and that's good enough. That's the best, in my opinion. I don't want you to feel like you have to push yourself to a breaking point where you're in burnout, just to prove that you can do it. So listen to your body, listen to your brain, and trust your own feelings about whether or not you feel like you can handle what you're doing. And try to support your kid in the best way possible in that journey.
I think you're really describing so beautifully the practice of exploring one another's capacities with a compassionate lens and the ability to, like, actually, this phrase that has been happening to me a lot lately came to me from another podcaster, Sadi Gonzalez from Radical Learning Talks. She was speaking in a podcast about this idea of meeting each other where we are. Mm-hmm. And the phrase, stretching our edges. And I like to imagine, like, two circles expanding to meet each other. Mm-hmm. But, like, one circle may not be able to expand as far as the other circle, right? And so you might need to step into the role of being able to expand a little bit further to meet them where they're at. And then sometimes they may be able to expand a little bit further than they want to meet you where you're at, to whatever that I don't want to use the word demand, because I feel like there are demands and then there are, like, requirements for living that, like, we have to do.
Yeah.
And I know there's an overlap there and some grace and nuance around some things that we have to do, but, like, we could do it on a different timeline or in a different way, and things can look different. But I'm curious if you could share more on, like, maybe what that looks like in your home, like, within your internal family community of practice, like, keeping the demands low while also expanding edges with everyone in the family to like keep the house running, to keep things.
Yeah. Running. Oh gosh. I'm still trying to figure that out, Megan. So here's what I will say. And like I've said, we're neurospicy. And so, we run on, sort of like organized chaos is the best way I can describe it. Our house is complete chaos, I feel like, so much of the time, but in order to make sure that my kids sort of get through these healthy living demands, we definitely have a checklist every day. And my kids actually really love it and they thrive off of that.
I watched the TikTok on it.
Yes. And so the reason that I feel like that works, because it's easy enough to say, oh, just make your kids a checklist and put it up and have them go through it. That's not going to work, especially if you have a kid who, anytime you ask them to do something, because you're asking them to do it, they're just going to tell you no, in my experience. And so really what it's about is allowing your kids to take ownership in what they're doing. And that way, when it comes time for them to do it, they look at that and they're like, oh, that's something that, like, I helped do. That's something I helped create. And I want to do that because I remember doing that and I'm taking ownership of that. And it makes me feel good to get that done. So what I did with my kids, they actually helped make their checklist and they picked out, aside from, like, basic, like, hygiene stuff, like brush teeth, brush hair, take vitamin, they picked out every other thing on their checklist that they felt like they wanted to get done every day. Yeah. For us, it's not necessarily in the morning. And so we also try not to schedule things too early in the day. I have one child who has been getting up between the hours, between 5 and 6 every day for his entire life. And then I have another one who sleeps until 8, 9 o'clock sometimes. Yeah. So we have a very, like, it's individual, right? So now it's to the point where they want to get it done because they're things that they already picked out, right? It's their responsibility because they were the ones that said, hey, I want to give my dog a hug every day. I want to give mommy and daddy a hug every day. Which also gives us an opportunity to practice consent because they ask us beforehand, which is great. So I love that they chose that. But allowing them the space to create whatever it is that you're implementing really helps the process of making sure that they're willing to get that demand done. Yeah. So the checklist is helpful. We always, I shouldn't say always, we try to stick to a regular sort of like routine in our day, so regular rhythm in our day in terms of when they get their screen time, because we do utilize screens in our house twice a day. And so that's always on our schedule and it's the same time every day. So they know when to expect it. And we also have meals typically around the same time. Now snacks are another issue. Don't even get me started on snacks because they could snack all day. And if one more person tells me to put out a snack bin for my kids, I'm going to flip because they would eat the entire snack bin in one sitting. And like they, and we are not a family who restricts food. We do give them pretty much free rein to choose and eat whatever they want, but they would literally eat snacks all day long if we gave them that complete option to do so. So what I really feel like, this was a long-winded way of just saying that I really feel like your kids need to take ownership of what it is that they, of the demand it is that they're asking to be done.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. I think that's definitely the jam, is to co-create whatever space and flow you want. And when you co-create, everybody's input was there and it's always up for changing or reevaluating. And Yeah, it's really kind of simple.
Yeah. It sounds really simple. And I think sometimes when, you hear it put that way, where you like allow your kids to take ownership, it also takes the pressure off you. Like it's no longer, especially as the mother, our responsibility to make sure our kids get XYZ done, because they're now starting to take that responsibility and be more independent with themselves, which is kind of like the goal. You want your kids to be, independent in how they are and be self-sufficient eventually someday. And I think it's a great way to start that process.
For sure. I think that's actually a great note to end on, because we're coming up on time and I want to be respectful of that. But before we go, is there anything else that you want to add or at least tell folks where they can find you?
Yes. So I am on Instagram as the Humorous Homeschooler. I'm also on TikTok. The content on TikTok is a little more feral. I think in general, it goes with what I do on Instagram, but like I said, I'm a little more spicy, a little more outspoken on TikTok, and that's just because I feel safer there. And that's really the gist of it. But on Instagram, I think, a lot of people know this already. I love connecting with people. And so my DMs, I just love having conversations with people. And I've connected with so many wonderful individuals that I now consider friends, who I've exchanged numbers with, I've had phone chats with, I've had video chats with. We leave tomorrow to go to Pennsylvania and visit somebody who I met through Instagram. For the second time now, I'll be seeing her. And we're going to her maker's market tomorrow that in her homeschool group. And so it's this beautiful world that I'm so thankful for. And I'm so thankful for everybody who is sort of like along this ride with me. There's about 8,000 people on Instagram and I'm just like in shock every day. I just can't believe that there are that many people who like want to be here with me, but I just so appreciate it.
You just have a magnetic, energy. I think you just draw people in. I think it's really cool. I'm just so appreciative of you carving this time out to chat with me. I know you've got a day to get to, but this was such a good conversation. I could talk for hours and hours. And maybe I'll put like a voice note like feature on this episode. And if people want to share anything or say anything through voice note, I can pass those your way too.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, this is, thank you so much, Megan. This has been wonderful. No, and I feel like at some point we'll just have to do it again. We'll just have to tack on another hour.
We will need to do that definitely again.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Andrea.
Yes, thank you so much.
Take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this chat. I'm really glad that you're here. Episode 40 truly just feels like a great time to shift my focus and my energy to a coming series of episodes with a very pointed purpose: to speak with folks who are working on the ground in alternative SDE spaces and find out the many ways that groups and centers and schools are meeting the unique needs of the communities that they serve. We're going to be stepping out of theory and into practice and hearing all about it. I have begun these recording sessions and I'll be bringing them to you very soon. If you'd like to partner with me and support the work that I do and the community organizing and this upcoming series, please do head over to patreon.com/theunschoolfiles. You can jump in for as little as a dollar. I offer up some bonus content and some opportunities over there, and I would be so grateful. If you are not able to partner with me in that way, please do head over to theunschoolfiles.com, where you can join me in community by joining Discord or find all kinds of other related links and information there for how to get plugged in and not have to spend any money. Until next time, stay kind to each other.